Osho, the Golden Future, responses to disciples' questions given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 11.
Beloved Bhagwan, I have heard you say that Gautama Buddha's work came to an end when he became enlightened, and you started your work after your enlightenment. Could you say something more about this?
One of the most important things to be remembered by all is the way you have started your question. The question is, I have heard you say. Usually, people drop the first part. They simply say, you have said this. And there is such a great difference between the two. Such an immense difference that it is unbridgeable and needs a great understanding. Whatever you hear is not necessarily the thing said. What is said is not necessarily what you hear. And the obvious reason is that I am speaking from a different state of being and you are hearing from a totally different space. And in the transmission, many things change. It is always a sign of understanding to remember that whatever I have said may be totally different than what you have heard. Your question should be about what you have heard. because how can you ask a question about something which you have not heard? Gautam Buddha in his whole life never allows people to write down what he was saying. His reason was that if you are writing it down, your attention becomes divided. You are no more total. You have to hear and you have to write. And what he is saying, it's so subtle that unless you are totally, you are going to miss it. So rather than writing it down, try with your totality and intensity to approach your heart, to let it sink within you. He spoke for 42 years continuously. After his death, the first question was to write down whatever the disciples remembered. Otherwise, it would have been lost to humanity. They did a great service and also a great disservice. They wrote down but they came to see a strange phenomenon that everybody has heard something else. Their memory, their remembrance was not the same. 32 schools sprang up, proclaiming that this is what Buddha has said. Only one man, a man to be remembered forever, his closest disciple, Ananda, who was not even enlightened before Buddha died. Just out of his humbleness, knowing that I was unenlightened, how I can hear exactly what comes from an enlightened consciousness? I am going to interpret it. I am going to mix it with my own thoughts. I am going to give it my own color, my own nuance. It cannot carry within me the same meaning it has brought, because I don't have yet those eyes that can see and those ears that can hear. Out of this humbleness, the memories that he remembered and wrote down became the basic scriptures of Buddhism. They all start with, "I have heard Gautam Buddha say." And all the 32 philosophical schools, they were great scholars, far greater than Maitreya, than Ananda. Far more capable to interpret, to bring meaning to things, to make systems out of words. Those 32 schools slowly became rejected. And the reason for their rejection was, they have missed a single beginning, "I have heard." They were saying, "Gautam Buddha said." The emphasis was on Gautam Buddha. Ananda's version is the universally accepted version. It's strange. There were enlightened people, but they remained silent because what they have heard was not possible to be expressed. And there were unenlightened philosophical geniuses who were very articulate, and they wrote great treatises. But they were not accepted. And the man who was not enlightened, not a great philosopher, but just a humble caretaker of Gautam Buddha, his words have been accepted, and the reason is these beginnings, "I have heard." I don't know whether he was saying it are not. I cannot impose myself on him. All that I can say, what echoed in me, I can say about my mind, not the mindless. Silence of Gautam Buddha. Buddhist scriptures in this way are the only scriptures in the world which have this quality. Of the great difference between the master and the disciple. One who has arrived and one who is trying to arrive. You are asking, Pankaja, I have heard you say that Gautam Buddha's work came to an end when he became enlightened, and you started your work after your enlightenment. It is one of those extremes incidents of history where the obvious is completely ignored. I have tagged discuss with few very great scholarly Buddhist monks. One was Bhikshu Sangharakshita. He was an Englishman. But while he was young, searching, he found that Christianity has nothing to give. And became a Buddhist. When I met him, he had become very old. He used to live in the Himalayas in Kalimpong. He has written great books on Buddhism with such love and such insight. That one feels awful. I have been discussing many times with Bhikshu Ananda Kausalyan, who is the most prominent Buddhist scripture, scholar, and who has written much with depth and profundity. And the third man was Dr. Bhikshu Jagdish Kashyap. He was the head of the great institute of Buddhist studies. All these three people have not noticed the difference that Ananda's version is humble and truer, because he is saying what is reflected in his being. And he can be authoritatively only say that. When I pointed it to them, they were all surprised that we have been studying our whole life, but we never thought that this has any significance. We always thought it is just the way Ananda writes. And then I said to them, no Buddhist except few Zen masters is going to agree with me. The whole Asia is Buddhist. In different countries it has taken some different shape, different rituals. But one thing is similar everywhere, that he worked for 6 years hard enough to attain enlightenment. And he attained enlightenment after 6 years of hard work. This is just accepted. But when I came to see the life of Gautam Buddha, I was simply amazed, because in a way it can be said that he attained his enlightenment after years of hard work, but that is not the whole truth. It is not even a small fragment of truth. The truth is, he attained enlightenment only when he dropped all desire for it, all work for it, all hope for it, this gap between the hard work and relaxing and dropping the idea that anything like truth exists. He had done everything that was told to him, and yet no silence has descended on him. He has not been able to enter into his innermost being. He has knocked on the doors, but no door was open. His work was so total and intense that he could not conceive that anything more is there to be done. I have been to the small river Niranjana by the side of it. Where he had become enlightened one full moon night, that day the most important experience happened, which is not even talked about by the Buddhists, by the followers. It does not look important. They are not to be blamed. He has tortured his body. He has been fasting for months. And he had become so weak. And Niranjana is a very small river. He had got into the river for his morning bath. But even the smallest river and its current was too much. And he started going down with the river. He could not manage to get out of it. He hung with the root of a tree. That moment was momentous. Hanging with the root of the tree in the river, a thought arose in him that what kind of stupid life I have been living. all this asceticism, all this arduous effort has led me nowhere to truth, but only to weakness. It has not given me an abundance of life. It has brought me closer to death. How this kind of discipline, which is being taught by all the schools, is going to help me cross the ocean of life and reach the further source? A question mark about his whole life, its time, and in a clear moment, in a transparent moment, on that morning, the sun was rising, something changed into his whole being. He has renounced his kingdom. That moment he renounced his renunciation too. He has renounced this world. In that moment he renounced that world too. He has renounced ambition, power, prestige, and now he saw that in a subtle way, even the effort to achieve enlightenment is nothing but ambition. That it is also a desire. Desire for a more eternal life, desire for truth, but anyway it is also a desire. As he struggled to get out of the river, that desire was also dropped. He rested under a Bodhi tree. For the first time, in his whole life, he was utterly relaxed. There was nowhere to go, nothing to find, no effort to be made. And amazingly, the silence that he was seeking, it started descending on him like rain. By the evening, he was a totally changed man. Calm and cool, at home, at ease. The center that he was searching for, he loved about itself. Because the seeker himself was the start, he was doing something absurd. The center of his being was not something separate from himself. Unless all desires disappear, all ambitions disappear, unless you have nothing to do, nothing left to be done, you are just sitting. Peaceful. He found the center. He was the center. There was no object anywhere else. One of the most important Danish philosopher, Søren Kierkegaard, has said that subjectivity is all you can call it religion. You can call it truth, you can call it nirvana, but your own subjectivity, your own being, and by the evening a beautiful incident happened. It was full moon night. It has just passed 1 or 2 days before. It was the same full moon night. A woman in the nearby village . In India, people worship trees. They worship animals, they worship stones. They worship mountains. They worship the sun, the moon. On the surface it looks very childish, but deep down the question is not what you worship. The question is that you worship. Whether it is the sun or the moon or a tree or a river, these are only excuses. The real thing is worship. That woman was a worshipper of that tree under which Gautama Buddha was sitting. The moon has risen. This is the strongest moon in the whole year, the most beautiful. And Gautama Buddha was almost looking like a god under the tree in the silence of the forest by the side of the river. Particularly to that woman, because she has asked the tree something and her desire was fulfilled, and she has promised that she will come with delicious food to offer to the god of the tree. She thought perhaps the god of the tree has come out of the tree and is sitting and waiting. And Buddha was hungry. He has not eaten for many days. So when she offered, her name was Sujata. He accepted. He slept for the first time in these 6 years of torturous search. Without any tension, without any dream, just a silence was the only experience that was becoming deeper and deeper. His sleep was becoming samadhi. When there are no thoughts, no desires, and the mind is quiet, sleep becomes samadhi. It becomes enlightenment. And in the morning when he opened his eyes, just visualize, nowhere to go, nothing to achieve, and as he saw the last star disappearing in the sky, he saw himself also disappearing in the sky. this he calls nirvana, disappearing. He became absent. Just a pure silence and nothing. A joyful silence, a silence that has a song in it, a silence which is an invisible dawn. This is the day of his enlightenment. Buddhist scholars for 25 centuries have thought that he achieved this state because of those 6 years of arduous effort. I differ from them absolutely. And they have not been able to prove to me and they thought that I am crazy. Because if it was true, then in 25 centuries people would have seen it. I say that he attained enlightenment because he dropped the desire to attain it. Pankshya, I said, Gautam Buddha's work came to an end when he became enlightened. He worked too hard. I have never worked for enlightenment. I have never followed any discipline, any scripture, any religion, any ascetic path. Where Buddha reached after 6 years of arduous effort, I found myself there from the very beginning, sitting under the tree, relaxed. People used to think, my teachers, my friends, that I must be mad. Even sometimes I used to think that perhaps they are right. Because everybody has ambition. I don't have any. Everybody wants to become this and that. And I want simply to sit silently and not to do anything and just be myself. Enlightenment to Buddha was the culmination of his whole work. My work started after my enlightenment. I never searched for it. It is one of those mysteries which have no explanation. It knocked on my door. And I said to it, come in, it is open. I have not even taken the trouble to open the door. I have left it open always. The day I became enlightened, then my work began. My work is you. Gautama Buddha's work was himself. I have lived for you. I have no other reason to be alive. Because all that life could give to me, it has given it to me without asking. It has been very generous to me. But after my own enlightenment, I felt the first urge in my being that this is so simple, so natural, that it should happen to everybody. And unless it happens to everybody, the world is going to remain in misery and in suffering. Gautama Buddha was enlightening himself, I have been enlightening others. So where his work was completed, my work started.
Book 1. Whenever I try to write what I would like to tell you before going back to the West, I find myself as speechless as Lancelot. It is more than gratitude, more than love, more than you and me. And yet, some longing to convey this feeling is there, strong, and doesn't go. There is a quiet sadness and a burning fire. Beloved Master, how can I express the immensity that has filled me so many times when sitting in your presence and living in your Buddha field?
सत्यम स्वरूप द मोमेंट इट हैपन्स इट इज ऑलवेज मोर देन लव इट इज ऑलवेज मोर देन जॉय It is always more than gratitude. Because life is more than you and more than me. It is so multidimensional. It is so vast. That if you are not aware of it, you are capable to express your feelings, but the moment awareness enters in your life, explanations start disappearing. Expressions become impossible. Because whatever you can say falls very short. There have been many people on the earth who have achieved the ultimate, but we don't even know their name for the simple reason because the moment they achieved, they became dumb. The silence was so deep they could not find out a way to convey what has happened to them. There are many mystics in the world, but very few masters. Every mystic is not a master. It is a rare combination of articulateness, of using words in such a way that they carry wordlessness in them, to say things in such a way as if nothing has been said. To be in such a way as if you are not. And the more you are absent, the more you are a pure presence. You are asking me, whenever I try to write what I would like to tell you, before going back to the West, I find myself as speechless, as Lancelot. You are fortunate. It is part of blissfulness to be so silent. But you know something has to be said. But there is no way to say it. You know there is a great blissfulness overflowing you. A gratitude in your heart. And it does not look right not to express them. But all words are so earthly. And all these experiences are so unearthly that there is no way of translating them. Even the great masters who try to convey something of the inexpressible have to find a strange way. Just the other day I received the news of a man in the occupied part of Kashmir by Pakistan. He is 125 years old. And he has joked about death three times. This was the third time. He dies. Doctors declare he is dead. And there is great mourning and friends and relatives and preparations. And at the final moment when they are taking him to the graveyard, he opens his eyes and he starts laughing. First time when he did it, people thought it may have been just a coma and we got misled. Second time they were more alert not to be deceived by the old fellow. In every way it was made certain that he is dead, but still the same thing happened. At the last time, just when they were putting him into the grave, he said, "Wait." He said, "Can't you see the joke? And he has performed it now again at the age of 125. This is his way, a strange way of saying to you that life is eternal and death is just a joke. He is saying it by his own life. And this time he has told that now I am very old and I cannot go on doing this. Strategy for long. So perhaps this is for the last time. Remember, fourth time I may be really dead. But they said, "We can't believe you. Every time you say that, next time I may be really dead." He's showing the eternity of life and consciousness. He's a master. Without words, he is saying what Upanishads have said, "Amritasya Putra." You are sons and daughters of eternity. But his way of saying is far more significant, because words can be used in a very poetic way. And still they may not be true. They may not be the experience of the poet. But this man knows how to go deep, so deep into himself that there is no medical way to find out that he is still alive. Its speechlessness is bound to happen before anything that you can experience. But you cannot bring it to words. You see a beautiful sunset. What can you say? You see a bird on the wing in the sky. So beautiful. Just the expression of freedom. But what can you say? And whatever you say will always fall short of the target. Only mundane things can be said. The sacred makes you speechless. Because it is more than gratitude. You say gratitude and you said plainly feel you have not said it. The world is so small and the experience is so big. And yet there is a great longing to convey the feeling. These are the mysteries of life. That when you cannot say, the urge becomes more and more powerful to say. The musician says in his own way, the poet says in his own way, the painter says in his own way, but nobody succeeds. Something remains beyond all expression, and that something beyond expression is God, is truth, is enlightenment, is liberation. But these words also don't say it. They only indicate, just fingers pointing to the moon. You are right, there is a quiet sadness and a burning fire . How can I express the immensity that has filled me so many times when sitting in your presence and living in your Buddha feet? You will have to go through an alchemical change. That sadness is beautiful. It is not misery. It is just the sadness of experiencing the beyond. And the inability to express it. And the burning desire to express it. Turns into creativity. You can paint, you can sing, you can dance. You can find your own way somehow to indicate the beyond. And the burning fire will not be a torture to you. It will become a great joy of creativity. So don't make it sadness and don't make it a suffering. Feel blessed. Change it into a great laughter. It is only a question of getting out of the bed from the right side. The Mother Superior of the convent awoke in a happy mood, dressed and set off to visit her flock. Good morning, Sister Augusta. God bless you. Are you happy at your work? Yes, Reverend Mother, but I am sorry to see you got out of bed the wrong side this morning. The Mother Superior ignored the remark and passed on to another nun. Good morning, Sister Georgina. You look pleased with yourself. I am Reverend Mother, but it is a pity you got out of bed on the wrong side today. The Mother Superior, greatly puzzled, moved on to a young novice. Tell me, little sister, do you also feel I got out of bed on the wrong side? I'm afraid so, said the nun. But why? Am I not as happy as a songbird and pleasant to you all? Yes, Mother, but you are wearing Father Vincenza's slippers.
Yes, of course.